Welcome to Side by Side, a podcast where I, Robert Kwong, take you inside conversations with artists, creatives, healers, and warriors taking the charge in their transformational story. In honor of Lunar New Year on February 10th of this year, I wanted to bring on a special guest whose journey paved the way for me and my passion for language and communication, my mom, Jia Zhang. Before immigrating to America, she was a language teacher and published author in China. She was around the age I am now when she made the decision to start a new life, learn a new language, and take a risk by doing something no one in our family had before. In this conversation, we dive inside her early life growing up in China, the cultural differences and similarities between American and Chinese culture, and some tips and tricks for language learning at any age. You can find more side-by-side episodes at sidebysidepodcast.podbean.com. And if you'd like to connect with me about coaching or music services, please visit www.robertkwonghome.com. Okay, so for listeners who are joining in today, I reached out to my mom, who is all the way out in Colorado. I really wanted to speak to her and introduce her to listeners because she's had such a big impact on my life. And also, we have a lot of things in common. So yeah, it's kind of strange, right, Mom? I've never spoken to you like this before.
It's true. And maybe it's my fault. I always act like, yes, I'm the mom. And now I'm thinking back, I should treat you all, should be more like you're my friend.
Maybe. I think it's just like different cultures, right? So for people who don't know, you and I both immigrated to America. So when did you come to America?
In 1996. I'm sorry, that's when I become the citizen. I came to U.S. in 1994, September.
1994.
Yeah.
And then before that, you were in China.
Yes.
Primarily, yeah, Beijing.
I grew up in Beijing, but after college, I went to the city in the south, which is called Shenzhen.
Yeah, which is where I was born, I believe, yes. Right? I always think of myself as Beijing person because that's where what I remember the most. But actually, every time people ask, I was like, no. I was born in Shenzhen, but I kind of call myself closest to like a Beijing Chinese person. So, you know, this is such a big question because like my generation don't always get to ask our parents these questions so openly and stuff. Overall, like, what do you remember about growing up in China during the time that you were growing up? It must have been very different from my childhood.
Oh, yes, of course. You know, time changes. And when I was grew up, I have been through Cultural Revolution. And also, I saw the first hands of the reform of China. So that's lead China to today, the economy and also other stuff totally changed the country. So I have seen all of that and been through most part of that. So yeah, totally different.
Yeah, because I grew up, you know, when I lived in China, it was in the 90s, which is actually, there was a lot of growth. There was a lot of like new things happening. From what I remember, you know, people were enjoying things like fashion now that we take for granted. You know, it took a while for China to open the doors, right? And so times were just so different from when I grew up, from when you grew up. Also, what kind of life did my grandparents have in China?
You know, both of them have been to the World War II, and after World War II was the war with the internal war, civil war, and so was a turmoil time period. So they have a really harsh life when they grew up, or when they were in China. But when I grew up, even though during then we were poor, you know, we don't have everything, all of the supplies limited. And but however, the time I was there was, pretty peaceful. At least there's no war. Doesn't mean there's no trouble. There's plenty of trouble, but there's no war. We don't have to ever worry about our life, you know. So that's one thing different between my lifetime in China and your grandparents. And also my life, compared with your life in China, you know, when you grew up, you have, pretty much everything you need, not always everything you want. But when I grew up, that's not the case.
Yeah. So what was something that you remember thinking I had that I just could take for granted that you were just like, wow, you have no idea how lucky, or something that you didn't have?
I think when you grew up, you get, all of attention and the love from the family member, your grandparents, you know, and also, my point of view, we tried our best, even though there's a time I have to leave you in Beijing and I work in Shenzhen. And, but that's also, I think about now today, everything have a double sword, and I wish I can, have you on my side all the time. But however, if I don't have that period of time for myself, and I probably won't get the opportunity or make enough money to buy the two apartments I had when I was in China, and also get myself more knowledge and study harder, which lead me to come to US to get my to go to graduate school,
And start a new life.
Age of the 30s, so good or bad, this is just a life I choose during that time. Some regret and some of I feel like I can do more.
What did you like to study growing up? Because I think we have some actually common interest. At least as I got older, I got interested in things like language, writing, things like that. So what did you enjoy when you were younger, a kid?
When I grew up, more like I joined those choir group. And I enjoyed the time with my friends. We were little kids. I really enjoyed that time period. And also I enjoyed, the freedom. I was 7-some years old. I just have my backpack. I just walk to school, meet my friends on the street. We, say hello. We all, walk to the school together. We don't have to worry about safety. We don't have to worry about anything else. And we just kind of play or enjoy our life as a little kid. That part. But today, doesn't matter you're in China or in US, you always have to have the parents take you to school, pick you up from school, school bus. You don't have the luxury of just a whole bunch of little kids, have a backpack and just sing, dance, and walk and freely. Part I do miss, even though materials wise we're not have that much, but today thinking back, I miss that part.
Just being with people. I remember living in Beijing with grandparents, and like right at the bottom of the building is when all the neighborhood kids would play, and I would sometimes play. We play hopscotch and different things, and then we would like go home for dinner, and no one had to worry too much, really, because there was somebody in the neighborhood is keeping watch over the kids. And there was a lot of like community support. You kind of understood how to keep the community safe almost. And now I feel like there's a lot more like fear of each other and kind of, worried, even though probably many people would say things are better in many ways. But it's true. I agree with you. Yeah.
Just so much, people are so relaxing, and the people are friendly, the neighborhood, everybody so friendly. And now today I should say I have a luxurious lifestyle here, and I have everything I need and most of things I want. But everywhere I go, I kind of like with my husband or fear a friend. It's totally different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. There's like something about looking at the past. Sometimes it's like, oh, that's different now. And I didn't know that was going to be different when you got older. But yeah. Although, actually, besides from the freedom, I do want to say you were the oldest daughter. Yishudajie.
Yes.
So not always so free. You also had a lot of responsibilities from what I remember, right?
Yeah, we kind of, you know, as elder kids in the family, and you always have a responsibility to kind of, yeah, you should keep eye on your younger brother, your younger sister. You have a little bit more things to do. Doing then, you know. Now, even though in my family, I think I did a little bit more for my younger brother, you know, your uncle. But my sister, we only, you know, 2.5 years difference between us. Mm-hmm. So we're kind of grew up together. I really didn't do much for her, I have to say. We're more like friends and, sister, we always do things together, and I have a lot of fun with her. We grew up together.
Yeah, having a little sister by your side, actually, I think that would have been nice. And then my uncle was the youngest, and also the boy. So I think very different childhood, probably.
Yeah, and also we're, you know, 10 years difference between my brother and myself.
Right.
So that's also make a difference. So I did take care of him more than, you know, my sister or your aunt.
Mm-hmm.
And in some way, I miss that part. I would love to be with them more often.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I miss the family, the friends in China. I have to say that. Mm-hmm.
Makes me think about the next question I was going to ask you, which is like, what do you remember about the immigration process? Was it difficult? Did it take a long time? You know, just what do you remember? Because I was so young myself.
Actually, it's not too bad. You know, what is the most hard part is the uncertainty. You don't know if, you know, the paperwork you get prepared is, you know, is enough, where you can get a visa, you are not, and should I buy airplane ticket or should I not, should I apply school or not, you know, kind of everything is uncertain, and they all affect with each other, so that makes things more difficult.
Yeah, so that was the most difficult part. It's just sort of having to wait and see if everything was going to happen. And if something happened, can then, so it's just like very hard to plan. And I think I remember stories. I don't know what it's like now because of, you know, the last few years, but I remember people could wait years to get a visa, right?
Yes, sometimes it's hard. At this part, I was lucky and I prepared my, everything. In 6 months, and I went to the embassy in Guangzhou, which is a hotel called Bai Tiange. And I went there, and I was really lucky. I got the visa right at that point.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I don't have to wait, and I just get it.
Yeah.
And so I feel consider myself very lucky.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I was lucky too as a result, because, you know, your immigration process made my immigration process much easier because I was a minor and I was your child. So anyway, so since coming to America, do you remember like a very early memory of like your first impression of America when you first got here that like always stuck with you? So for example, I have mine with the pizza at that hotel, remember? Just like things like that. Do you have memories of that like yourself?
Yes. My first stop from Hong Kong to San Francisco, and when I get out, you know, the airport, walk on the street, I still remember it was Union Square, you know, and I look around, and I was thought, oh my God, there's so many foreigners.
Mm-hmm.
And so today, of course, I realize that is American is, you know, literally immigrant country. And, you know, there's people from everywhere. Unlike when I was in China, you know, most people you see is all, you know, we were looking pretty much the same.
So,
we say old Chinese. And if you see some foreigners, such as, you know, there's plenty of that foreigners in Shenzhen, but you know, they're all, you know, work there. And there wasn't a grew up there where just permanently live there. So that's different. But later I learned, you know, whole bunch of that. Then the other things was my next stop was landed in Boulder, Colorado, and when I, you know, walk on the street, when I drive on the street from where, you know, from place to place, my next impression was, oh my God, there's no people. Where's all the people hiding? Of course, it's a teasing, not a hiding, but I just say I feel like, you know, there's no people, you know, around me. I feel unsafe. But today is a totally other way around. When I go back to China, visit my friends and the family, there's too many people and too close to me. I feel not safe. So just that's the thing. Remind me that I learned all over the years leave both countries. There's no right or wrong, just a matter of the culture difference and you getting used to it. I grew up used to all the people everywhere. I feel really good, feel safe. I get here, take me a while to used to that. Oh my God, I have this house and nobody around me, you know, blah, blah. But now I'm used to this kind of lifestyle.
Well, that was you remember when I first landed in Colorado, that was my exact same thought. I didn't really think that way when we were in like Florida for a part of the trip. But then when we got to Colorado, I was just like, where's all the people? It felt like we were driving and driving and driving and there was just like no city. I was like, what's going on? And honestly, it's still kind of that way, although Colorado, it's much more developed now in many ways as well. But I remember having the same exact thought. But then now it's like you coming to New York is kind of challenging because there's just so many people. Over eat at a Chinese restaurant, we're sort of familiar, but it's so loud in Chinese restaurants. When I go get like authentic Chinese food in Chinatown and all the uncles are behind us like doing their thing, it kind of feels familiar, which is nice, but still you're sort of like, wow, I'm not used to that anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
So in the beginning, but also maybe even now, what helped you navigate language and cultural barriers? How did you approach it? What did you do?
I think, you know, everybody have a different like life experience. For me, I'm just speaking for myself right now. And the go to college, you know, I went to CU Boulder. That helped me a great deal. Then I get to see a lot of things and also associate with a lot of different people. And that helped me a great deal. And also helped me to understand the cultural difference. And in college, I also very lucky, all of my professors, they're really good, and they just treat everybody with kindness, and I appreciate every single one of them. Without them, I won't be here, you know, like today.
I think you did. I remember you having lots of support, or I think people really believed in you. That was the sense I got. They saw how hard you worked, but also just, it just still is so much work thinking about you got your degree in one language, your undergrad bachelor's degree in one language, and then you got your master's in a different language. I mean, I think most people don't understand how much dedication, like you have to really want to put in the work in order to be able to do that successfully. And you did. And then not only that, you were a teacher in China And then eventually you became a professor in America. To me, like, I still think like that's such a big deal. And people don't understand how impressive that is.
Yeah, I think about it, you know, for me, to get a job at the DU and all of that, work for there for, you know, all of these years, mainly is due to, first of all the help I get, you know, all the professors from CU Boulder, and they have all the patients. And of course, then you cannot avoid that. You have to be willing to do that yourself and to work really hard. I think you probably remember when you were little and how hard, that's when I was in, when I was in the graduate school. Mm-hmm. And I pretty much have to, you know, review all of homework or read the books until like in the morning, 1 or 2 o'clock, and mm-hmm. prepared for the next day's mm-hmm. class or whatever. Because I come here and my English skill pretty poor, and even today I still have a lot of a problem, and I try to work on it still. But anyway, yeah, you have to willing to. But that's also, I think in our generation, that's in our heart and also in our blood. We just are willing to work whatever takes to achieve our goal. For me, doing that, I don't want to just stay home and mm-hmm. do nothing. You know, I can enjoy life, but I just wanted to achieve a goal to get education, higher education in US, and that this there has, you know, the best education system, I have to say, you know, mm-hmm. doing them, I have to say, seems mm-hmm. strange all the time, but my personal feeling, mm-hmm. You know, the best system, and so I wanted to get educated here, just to say that.
Feels good to pursue something and to try to accomplish something. I think I have a little bit of that myself. But you were a teacher in China as well, and then you taught at Denver University. And in fact, correct me if I'm wrong, the department that focuses on Mandarin and Chinese languages, you were sort of the first person that they had to sort of start the program, basically, and to establish a Chinese language department there, right?
No, it's not a department. It's when I, you know, started working for DU, I worked for the languages department. We have all of the different languages in that mm-hmm. department. But before I get there, there were no Chinese program. I did yeah. start the program.
You started the program.
And later, yeah. the program, you know, growing up. And
mm-hmm. I remember... Well, I took a glance. Okay, maybe I wasn't supposed to, but I remember you just getting the most amazing evaluations, both that the students were like, not only it was challenging, they often said it was one of the hardest classes they took in their education, but also they left the class actually having language and Chinese language skills that they can use for work or for business. And it's not just, you know, something you just do and then forget about. People really got a lot out of it. So my question to you is, what do you like makes like a really great teacher? Like if someone came to you for advice about teaching students and having a positive impact as a teacher, what would you say?
You know, first of all, you really love the job. My entire life, I was, teaching. Now I'm retired, but my entire life, I was teaching in China here. And that's my passion. And then because of that, I also love my students, doesn't matter in China or here. And now I'm thinking back, you know, I was too harsh on my students here in the DU. And, but however, and because of, you know, from my heart, I just hope after they left my class or finish, study with me, they can do something with the language. So I tried my best, and but I think most of the teacher, they have that kind of goal mm-hmm. in their teaching.
If someone wanted to start learning Mandarin Chinese, How do you recommend they get started? Like, how would you approach it if they're just like, I'm, you know, not Chinese, I don't know anything about the language, but I want to start somewhere. Like, how might they begin?
I think first, the college, you know, always is a good place to start. And the second, just, you know, stay with it. Don't give up. I think all of the people, if they succeed, it doesn't matter in which arena. And that's the key to succeed. And you cannot always change, you know. Even the textbook, you cannot do things. I told my friend in China when their kids were, they study English, where my friends here study Chinese, just say, you know, don't do things like somebody told you, hey, this is, you know, very cool, you know, good, great textbook. Then you drop what you have, then take other, you know, a new set of a book. Then you, what happened? You start over again. Mm-hmm. Then you, in the middle, then you drop again. So you never reach to the end. Just stay with one set of a book and study it. And then you can get the second one. And you don't have to be too hard on yourself. Just say, oh, I have to remember or know every single thing from, mm-hmm. you know, learn every single thing from this book. You, there's things you can, you know, still don't understand. It doesn't matter. You just then, from the beginning to the end, stay the one textbook, one side of a book, then start a new book, then pick up something new. You know, I think that's the key. I think that's also in the life, also same thing. If you change all the time, then you never achieve anything. You always mm-hmm. give up.
Do you think watching like Chinese programs, like now even on Netflix, there are some like programs and stuff. Do you recommend that that's helpful, watching that with like subtitles just to kind of like immerse yourself?
It is depends on your language skill. You know, yeah. As a TV opera, it's always speak faster than the subtitle, even faster, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think the best way is to have a friend. If I wanted to study Chinese, I may want to have a Chinese friend. We may help each other. I can help them with English. They can help me with my Chinese. Have a friend to start with everyday life. That's a big help. TV is, I think until you have a mid-Euclid level of a scale, and that won't help because just speak too fast. But however, I do recommend my friends in China whose kids are, you know, studying mm-hmm. English right now. So I just told them, when you get home, turn on the TV in English. Doesn't mm-hmm. matter, news, movie, and then don't sit there and try to memorize everything. You can just go do anything you want. And the English like a background, you know, in the back of your head, and you can listen, you can just getting used to the, you know, the English environments.
Yeah. Like style, yeah.
Yeah. And so that's well, that's also in the long run. Also how, but that one is take a while.
Yeah, and also like the programs have like stylized language that you may or may not use mm-hmm. versus, you know, practicing language that would be very useful. That's also true.
You think about just like a little kid, you know, when you grew up and the first thing you will say to your parents will be the language your parents say.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so why? Because of the environment every day from your newborn and until you're 2-3 years old, you can speak fluently. What do you hear? You see your parents, whatever they speak. So that is a theory,
That's actually very true. You're right. You know, there's a lot about Chinese history that's very fascinating, but I'm probably not as familiar as you. Is there a part of Chinese history that you find really interesting or maybe you don't feel like a lot of people might know about or is frequently talked about, but you find it interesting about our history?
Once again, there's plenty of them. To answer a question like this, you know, it depends. You want to ask about the time, you know, I lived in China And those 30-some years, which part I, you know, fascinating to me, were the history I studied. You know, if you ask me the history, I know I learned from the book. And then I would say I'm really fascinated by the Ming Dynasty, Qing Dynasty. These two dynasties really, really interesting, are really interesting to me. I like to learn more about it and study more about it.
Mm-hmm.
I know some, but not, you know, sure. And so, and if you talk about the lifetime I, you know, I spent in China, I have to say the time when I was in, get to Shenzhen in 1986, and I watched Shenzhen growing, like amazing, you know, so different. So that, and the changing so fast, and not only our own lifestyle, but it's where our own life, the whole city, and also the impact of their growth impact on the whole China. That's very interesting. And a part of that, because of that, so today, even, you know, after 30 years since I have been to US, every chance I get, you know, to go back to China, the first visit will be Shenzhen. I just love to watch the change. And every time I always have been amazing, the difference, even though I go back once a year, but still, I'm amazed by everything changed so fast, and the people's lifestyle, and the whole economy, and
yeah, I don't think people realize how fast the advancement has been in China, especially. I like to talk about, and I haven't been there in a moment, and it's developed even more since I've been there, but just like the infrastructure, like public transportation and just different things that are available for people is quite different. Like in the US, I think most people are car owners, right? But in China, the public infrastructure is built so differently. And
And that's also due to the population. You know, we have America and China have the same, almost the same amount of the land, and but the population, only, you know, like America, only 1/4 of what China.
Yeah, I think it's like 300 something million. And
so just totally different. So in China, definitely the public transportation works for them. But in US, probably, you know, different thing. And so I understand that. And
I want to ask you, like, kind of opposite questions. What do you think, in your experience, your perspective, the biggest differences between like American and Chinese culture that you've experienced, but also like what do they have in common to you?
I think that the let me start talk about the two country, the, you know, something in common. I think both country, the people, they all want the best for their own country. And they all work for their own, they all love their own country. That part is really, that is the truth. They all die-hardly love their own country. And they don't enjoy what, like, if, you know, one side of people criticize about that, or even, especially when something they said is not true. And so I, you know, back and forth between China and America, and I do see the loyalty of the people toward their own country. That's you know, in common. And talk about cultural difference. There's, you know, I have to say there's a lot of difference in things that's due to their lifestyle or the culture and the way they grew up differently. So there's a lot of things that, different, like you know, if you ask people living in China, what do they think is the called the cities modern and you know, good lifestyle? They say, oh, there's a high-rise building, the number of the high-rise building, the, you know, the TGV they have, you know, that's their, because of, that makes things convenient for them. But if you know, I live in US for so long, if you ask me, I like the quieter and the convenience. Yeah, I want to go somewhere, I just get into my car and drive into somewhere, that kind of freedom. And I don't have to worry about, oh, so many people, everything I do, I have to wait in line, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, yeah, that's totally different, you know,
perspective. Yeah, like different, also just big city and rural living, yeah, as well. Yeah, so different.
Yeah, so people, yeah. Oh, I found out that's for both sides of the country. You know, sometimes people harder to understand about that difference. They usually, people have the tendency to use, oh, this is my life. So some people go to China, they say, oh, look, there's so many resources, you know, blah, 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 start criticizing. But that's what they need. But the same thing, the people, I got friends come over, you know, so, you know, I live in this, they consider a big house, and but as a, like hardly to see any neighbors. So everywhere you go, then they ask me, the first thing they ask is, oh my God, are you scared to live you know, alone like this? So you I understand the both side of their point of view, but that's is I just wish the whole world, the people, to get to know the other side more before they start open their mouth, start criticize to other, you know, to the other country with other people. And because sometimes I listen to both sides, it's like, oh my God. And
yeah, well, I mean, it puts Chinese Americans in a weird position. You know, it's very hard to actually think and speak in a way that's very entirely one-sided or black and white.
Yeah, I also, you know, just my own experience, I have to be careful what I say when I'm in China. Okay, one time I have a gathering with my high school and a college classmate when I was visiting Beijing. And during that period, my friend just say, you know, oh, we have a, you know, we know the car is a really developing, private car really developing in China, and then almost how many families can have a car, you know, blah, blah. And, you know, I didn't think very clear. I just say, I don't think it's a good idea to, you know, for China to every family to have a car. We'll be because of the traffic jam and then the air pollution and the blah, blah. Then one of a friend kind of like offended by my
opinion.
And she kind of just looked at me and just said, you know, this is typical of you, American. You come over, just told us, you know, you shouldn't do that. Well, you were, how many cars you have? Your family of three, how many cars do you have? You know, so finally I realized we're kind of stand a different position. And we're talk about, you know, so we see things a different way. The mm-hmm. other example was one of my friend. He was in charge with one of a big company, and he was really proud of his achievement. And so while I was there, he showed me his you know, the factory, big factory, and related to some of the medicine, you know, make machine for make pills, all of that. But anyway, they have plenty of land. So he built the kind of the family housing for all of his employees. He's very proud of it. I went there, I have to say, very well done. And there's one area, and I remember all of the buildings, the 6 floors, and I forget it. 18 or something like that. Then I have an elementary school in the living area, then have a shop, you know, grocery store. Mm-hmm. Then you get in the morning, you just walk to the next door, is the factory. Very mm-hmm. convenient for them. And I look at it, I just, oh my God, it's really good. Then same thing again. And I just say, oh, I just wish you have more trees here. And I remember he looked at me, he said, if China has as many trees as America, then the Chinese have to live on the trees.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, so I have to, you know, I have to be sensitive about what I say.
Yeah.
But here it's the same. And I remember the most weird comment I get when I just get here. Some of, I forget what kind of circumstance that when people said, is that true China killed all the baby girls? So I said, look, I'm here. I'm 30 some years old, which means they didn't kill all of the baby girls. You know, you hear it all over the world, they ask us something, you know, you can't say anything, you not cannot, you know, criticize the government. I said, look, people talk all kinds of things. It's, so you know what I mean? And then if I say that, then if I explain it, then people said, oh.
I totally understand what you mean. It's like when you criticize something here, people hear you like you're Chinese.
Yeah.
When you criticize something when you're in China, people hear you like you're the American.
Yeah. So you know, in fact, I'm not trying to criticize about anything. I just try to tell them the truth of, you know, what I know about it, the thing, you know, the things that I talk about. What is the truth I know?
Mm-hmm.
You know. Mm-hmm. But then I managed to upset everybody. So my friend doesn't happy because they think I'm speak for the, you know, the other side of a government, and then the other side upset because they think I speak of this side of government. So anyway,
which is hilarious because you've never worked for the government.
No,
ever.
never.
But
no,
immediately
told them it's not true, you know, because I'm there every year
it's true, there's always going to be a little bit of I sense this forever. Like, I have to deal with the fact that America and China are always going to be competing and comparing each other. And as Chinese Americans, we're sort of in the middle and have experienced a little bit of both. So it's kind of, many people may not understand that perspective because they've never lived like that. You know, many of your friends have lived in China their whole life and everything. Of course, they wouldn't understand, but vice versa is also true. Which is always why I think holding space and listening to people's stories who have like somewhat not traditional or maybe unusual, you know, life experiences is so important, you know, because you kind of, your specific perspective, I think many people get, but I think it's very much like a one because you're an immigrant too. And, you know, it's like not everyone knows what it's like. So with Chinese culture and also many other cultures, but in China, there's just a lot of festivities, traditions, a lot of beliefs that we like to honor. And of course, just like holidays and things like that. Do you have a favorite one that you enjoy kind of remembering or?
It's the Chinese New Year. Just like here, you know, people just as the Western enjoy the Christmas.
What are some traditions for Chinese New Year? Dumplings?
Oh, you talk about food, there's plenty. Dumpling is a have to have. And then everybody else have all different, depends on, you know, which part of a country you live. You live north, it's different than the south. You live, you know, everywhere. But dumpling is a must to have. And the other one is a fish, you know.
Right.
Your fish, considering the pronunciation is you, you know, so it's bring your, you know, prosperous New Year. And so that's the other dish you have to have.
Oh, because yu is like jade? Yu? No.
No, yu is a planting extra, you know.
Ah, okay.
And all of that. So that's so. And there's planting food, but I think for my knowledge today, people is now more concentrated on the food because there's plenty of what they need, and the eating is not a big deal anymore. It's different than when I grew up, and all I was looking for is for the New Year. So there will be have some things that I used to, you know, where we usually we don't get it. But today people have everything, so the more important things for the New Year's is a gathering, family, friends get together, and relaxing. And as you know, they have usually they have a 1 week break for Chinese New Year, so everybody can relax and enjoy their life and to see family and friends, and that's more important. I do miss that part, and I haven't had a Chinese New Year, you know, in China since I got here. So that's more than 30 years.
Yeah. Wow. Now that you say that, that's a big deal. And this year, the Chinese New Year is coming up. So we're speaking a few weeks before then. So maybe to end the conversation, I wanted to ask, could you introduce a couple common phrases or a couple sayings that we have for Chinese New Year to say to each other?
When you see each other, that all depends on, you know, your status. If you're a little kid, and a grandson, grandkids, granddaughter, you see grandparents, you say, oh, 爷爷奶奶, 新年好, 祝您, 身体健康, 新年快乐, 什么健康长寿, so, all of that, then that's where you get the right, you know, package.
Red package with money. 身体健康 is have good physical health and good health overall. And then what was the other one?
健康长寿. Yeah, so have a long life, healthy and a long life. And so, but if you are, you know, the people still working and young and, you know, so you probably say 恭喜发财, wish them have a prosperous new year. Health and all of that.
You know, now that you're saying that, I'm just like, I'm really happy that our holiday is all about kind of making sure everyone is healthy. I think that's very, we don't say that too often, or like we don't think about it all the time, but I love that. Like everyone has good health.
Popular was 合家幸福, so with your whole family, you know, happiness.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody happy in the family. So that's a lot of things about health and happiness.
That's probably my favorite thing about Chinese language myself, is our sayings and our idioms and stuff. They're so fun and they're so clever, and there's, you can pack a lot inside just four words.
Yeah.
Can tell like a huge, it's like a, it can communicate a lot. That's probably my favorite part of Chinese.
Yeah, in
language.
Fact, I just send you know, for the New Year's, I just send you know, the New Year's wish to my friend in China. You know, all I say is, oh, 祝你们 健康快乐，合家幸福,
mm-hmm.
Everything goes smooth for you, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So all of that. So I just said,
wow, there's so many. You can just keep going. Yeah, I love that.
You can keep and going. You know. Then in fact, if anybody interested in this, you get online Baidu. You can
find, mm-hmm.
You know, what is a common New Year's wish, you know, people, you know, say, you know, blah, blah, they give you hundreds.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it all depends on who you say to, you know.
Yeah, whether it's your elder.
You're more on the, you know, 健康长寿, long life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but if, you know, we're same age, we say 健康快乐. You know, family, have a happy family, you know, 合家幸福, mm-hmm. you know, to the little one still in school, you will say 学业有成, which is, you know,
study hard.
Yeah, study hard, get, you know, achieve what they want to achieve, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Yeah, so depends. It's all you, depends on your status, what you say.
Mm-hmm.
And so you, there's some more to it, you know, that's a related culture under the language.
Yeah. I have to think about the right one to say to you.
Wish your mom 健康长寿.
健康长寿, 好吧.
幸福快乐.
Yeah, now you've got me thinking about Lunar New Year and Chinese New Year, but I just want to say thank you, Mom. I actually have been wanting to reach out to see if you'd be interested to speak to me in this way for a long time, and I'm glad I finally did it. It's so nice to be able to hear about experiences that I understand, that I know you also understand as Chinese American, and just we understand, we probably know each other's perspective the most because we're most similar in like our Chinese and American experiences. So I hope we get to see more of each other this year, and I love you very much, and thanks for being my mom.
I'm lucky I have you, and thank you, and I'm really happy we got a chance to do this, because I don't think we ever talk like this, you know. Today I'm relaxed and answer your question, and then otherwise when I see you, probably always say, oh no, you need as a tiger mom always say, you need to lose weight. So actually today I'm not acting like a mom, I'm just like your friend to answer your question.
That's okay. You're off the clock for today, and then tomorrow you can get back to mom duties as you should.
And in fact I enjoy this, and I wish in the future we can talk like this more often. Okay,
I hope we can too. Thank you.